Welcome to the final episode of Finding Cherry. I'm April Johnston. Every February 22nd for 39 years, Janice McKinney returned to a bend in the 1100 block of Corn Planter Road in Winfield Township, Butler County, to remember and to grieve. It's the last place anyone ever saw her daughter, Cherry Mahan. The place where she stepped off the school bus in 1985 and disappeared. This past February 22nd, the 40th anniversary of Cherry's disappearance, Janice changed her routine. Instead of holding vigil on Corn Planter Road, she drove to the Saxonburg VFW, where Cherry's angels, those four friends who have become amateur investigators and full-time advocates for Janice, had decorated the hall with purple flowers and sweet photographs of Cherry. Cherry as an infant with balled-up fists. Cherry as a toddler wearing an open-mouthed grin. Cherry as a little girl, head tipped to the side and eyebrows raised in skepticism. Cherry age progressed to adulthood, looking like the teacher she always wanted to be. For hours, family, friends, reporters, and strangers lined up in front of those photographs, waiting for the chance to talk with Janice, to offer hugs and sympathy. Among the crowd were three familiar faces: Glenn Hall, Christopher Walsh, and Max DeLuca, three of the many Pennsylvania State Police investigators who have been assigned to Cherry's case over the years. They stayed all day, chatting with community members about Cherry. Corporal DeLuca, the current lead on the case, was particularly busy, patiently listening to tips and jotting down notes well into the evening. At one point, as the event neared its end, one of Cherry's angels, Bailey, searched the room until her eyes landed on Janice. Once she spotted her, she couldn't look away. She watched as Janice situated herself between two men and smiled for a camera. Goosebumps skittered across Bailey's skin. Janice was standing between Glenn Hall and Max DeLuca, between the first investigator on her daughter's case and the one everybody hopes will be the last. In the last episode, I left you with a bit of a cliffhanger, so let's go back. After Cherry's angels hit several investigative dead ends, Bailey and Tina began scouring the Megan's Law website, hoping to locate any child predators in the area. And they came across a familiar name. They took their suspicions to Janice, who confirmed that the name they recognized, it belonged to one of her parents' old neighbors. We're going to call him Charles, though that's not his real name. Police had investigated the family years ago in relation to Cherry's case, but despite the family's rumored history of pedophilia, little came of it. Bailey called DeLuca.
Bailey reached out to the detective and asked, I know that you had looked into this family before. Did you look into this person? And he said, yeah, he gave the name, we talked to him, and she said, no, not him, his son. And then it was like silence.
It was radio silence.
It turns out police had investigated Charles's father, but until Bailey called DeLuca with the tip, no one had ever looked at Charles. The revelation unleashed a flood of memories for Janice. She'd known Charles. She and her siblings played with Charles and his siblings when they were kids. Cherry would have recognized him. And if the explanation were believable enough, she may have gotten into a car with him, thinking he would drive her the short distance to her parents' home. Tina immediately began searching court records and found that Charles had racked up quite a number of charges over the years, mostly related to inappropriate conduct with children. Meanwhile, Alyssa took to Facebook.
We put out a post about child sex abuse in the area in the 80s and kind of asked that anybody who had information about local pedophiles to come forward if they felt comfortable. And it was a hard post. Like we were very unsure, like, are we going to make people feel uncomfortable? Like bringing to light that kids were being sexually abused in the 80s. They still are today, but nobody talked about it back then. It was, you kept to your own family, you minded your business. And the amount of information that we received just about people being victims, whether that be, you know, a friend, a neighbor, an uncle, their own father.
Male and female.
Oh, victims. Yeah, absolutely. And so what we were looking for is victims of this man that, you know, maybe could come forward. And we got that.
We did. We got lots of them, actually.
Yeah. And, you know, we never put any names out there, but I mean,
It's there.
Also there was a bombshell nugget of information from another relative who claimed either Charles or his brother once owned both a Dodge van and a blue sedan. If it's true, and the relative says they've got the photos to prove it, it brings that very first clue in Cherry's case full circle. By the time she learned all of this, Janice could feel Charles's guilt in her bones. Cherry's angels say they've never felt so certain about a theory. But secondhand accounts and accusations, no matter how credible, aren't enough to hang a case on. Gut feelings don't write warrants. Here's Alyssa.
The thing is, and you know, they've been pretty transparent about that with us. Without a confession, without DNA, without a body, they cannot just go off of secondhand accounts. They can't go off of a he said, she said to, you know, arrest somebody, to make a conviction, even to get approval for equipment to search certain areas that we've been tipped off to. And so it kind of feels like we're at this standstill of, unless we get more information, unless we get something that's more convincing, piece of information, tip, whatever, or we find something of hers, we, you know, find the van, we, you know,
find a backpack,
find the earmuffs, something. What else can we do? So it's been really frustrating. It was like all this momentum building up and all these things are clicking. But what's next?
To keep a sense of momentum and help find that piece of evidence that will allow state police to take action, the angels began reaching out to people whose particular brand of inquiry doesn't come with the limitations of law. One is an Iowa-based private investigator named Steve Ridge. His name may be familiar to some of you. He's been featured on People Magazine Investigates, Nancy Grace, and the Crime Junkie podcast, among others. He's probably best known for his work on the cases of Jody Huizentrout and Angela Green. Huizentrout is the news anchor who was taken from the parking lot of her Iowa apartment building in 1995. Green is the mother who vanished from her home in a Kansas City suburb in 2019. Ridge is not only working on Cherry's case pro bono, but he's put up $100,000 of his own money as a reward for information leading to the discovery of Cherry or her remains. The other person who's offered his help is cold case consultant, TV producer, and true crime author Ken Mains. On his latest television venture, a series called Death Row Confidential, A Serial Killer's Secret, Maine's, incredibly, closes 4 cold cases. It's a track record that gave the Angels a bit of optimism. After visiting Pennsylvania and meeting with Janice, Maines featured Cherry's case on his other show, a YouTube series called Unsolved No More. Though he spends much of the show offering well-tread background on the case, and he eventually arrives at the same conclusion Janice has come to, that the culprit is likely someone Cherry knew, he offers a sentiment near the end that rings hauntingly true. Hope isn't always a beautiful thing. He's right. Hope is laced with possibility, but it's also chained to uncertainty. That double edge has pierced every moment of Janice's life, but it was never quite as sharp as when she was raising her son, Robert. Robert McKinney was born 4 years after Cherry disappeared, so he never knew his big sister, but his childhood was certainly shaped by her.
Dear God, that poor boy. You know, if I could have built 10-foot walls around my house, I would have. But I didn't have Robert till 4 years after Cherry was kidnapped because I didn't want to go through life not being a grandmother, which it's a little scary because I don't know if that is ever going to happen. But he was so sheltered. I mean, heck, he used to play hockey in the kitchen and knocked my mother-in-law's front teeth out because he just was not allowed to go anywhere. And, you know, when he first started school, what I instilled in him was, okay, Mom, you're going to follow the bus. You're going to see me get off the bus. You're going to follow me into the school, right? I'm like, yes, absolutely. So I left work, came home, I got him on the bus, I followed the bus, and then he broke my heart because he got off the bus and said, you can go home now. But I was happy for that. And I also believed at that point, you know, I had, he needed to get out.
Robert was at school on November 5th, 1998, when Janice did what she had always considered unthinkable. She had Cherry declared legally dead. Pennsylvania requires it after 7 years in order to distribute assets. Janice waited 13. She would have waited forever, but she wanted Robert to have the $3,500 Cherry was awarded in a settlement following that car accident that broke her collarbone. And Janice wanted to donate the reward money the community had collected for Cherry to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. She ended up giving $50,000 to help the families of other missing children. Still, that day in a Butler County courtroom, in front of the judge who would declare Cherry legally, finally gone, was nearly as difficult as the day Cherry disappeared. Janice worried people would believe she'd given up, and then they'd give up too. But as Vince Giuliano reminded her in a video he made for the 40th anniversary event, those fears were for naught. Giuliano sits on the board of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and he also served as a senior vice president for ADVO, spearheading the Have You Seen Me campaign that Cherry originated. Here's what he said. Edited a bit for length.
Hi, Janice. I'm sorry I can't be with you today, but I want to send a message to you as you mark another year without Cherry. I stand before you not just as someone who has walked this journey with you for 40 years, but as someone who has witnessed the strength of a parent's love, unwavering, unbreakable, and endless. For 4 decades, you have carried the weight of the unknown, the ache of unanswered questions, and the hope that never fades. And through it all, you have never been alone. When we started mailing the Have You Seen Me cards with Cherry as our first missing child, We developed a program with four timeless goals: to help find missing children, to raise awareness to the national problem of missing children, to deter would-be abductors, and to let no missing child ever be forgotten. The program has changed the way America searches for missing children. You don't need a badge to find a missing child, just two eyes. Pictures are the most powerful tool for law enforcement and hope for searching parents. Together with law enforcement, the National Center and its staff, over the past four decades, have never wavered on its mission for children to have a safer childhood. Pushed by the determination of parents like you, Cherry's face became a symbol of every missing child, a reminder that we must never stop looking and never stop fighting for answers. I want you to know that every search, every lead, every moment spent looking for answers was driven by the same stimulus that keeps you going. Hope. Hope that time cannot erase and that our efforts must continue to nurture.
This is where you come in. For the past several months, Janice and the Angels have spent parts of each weekend in the woods around Corn Planter Road, searching for missed clues. Maybe the van is hidden at the bottom of a steep drop-off. Maybe Cherry's backpack or earmuffs are waiting under the brush. It's a daunting number of acres for five people to search. If they had some direction, some way to narrow down the area, it would make their task so much easier. It would allow Ken Maines, or if the information is specific enough, state police, to bring in the proper equipment and technology to locate Cherry. If you know anything about Cherry's disappearance, who may have taken her or where she may be hidden, it's time to come forward. If you know who's involved, or if you heard a rumor 20 years ago or even last week, it's time to come forward. If you saw a blue backpack or Cabbage Patch earmuffs or beige ankle boots discarded along the road or in the woods or even in the nearby mines way back when you were a kid, it's time to come forward. Of course, you can call the State Police Butler Barracks and give your tip to Corporal DeLuca or one of his troopers. Or, if you prefer, go to the Find Cherry Mahan Facebook page, where you can message the Angels directly or click on the link to access an anonymous tip line. Everything the Angels learn, they share with DeLuca. And if you're thinking you still don't want to get involved, listen to this final plea from a mother who needs your help.
I know that somebody out there knows. I truly believe that if they were any kind of a good person, that they'd tell somebody. I don't even care if it's the preacher at the next door church. Just tell somebody, because I would never, ever want somebody to go through what I've gone through. Because that, even though that it made me such a strong person, I just, the torment and the things that I have given up, the fears that I have instilled in my son, it's crazy that I did it. And I just want somebody to know that I'm always out there to help anybody, but I also want somebody to help me.
Many thanks to Janice, Bailey, Alyssa, Carly, and Tina for your time and your candor. Janice, I hope this podcast helps in some way to bring you peace and answers. Also, thanks to Joey Smith for cover art and David Smith for production help. Please see the show notes for more source information and music credits. And please share this podcast with everyone you know. Someone has the information needed to finally solve the disappearance of Cherry Mahan.